You get dinged up in last night's game? Or are you a weekend warrior that still thinks you've got what it takes to play, but nagging injuries are slowing you down? It's time to talk to some of the region's top sports medicine specialists. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show. All you ever wanted to know about sports medicine and maybe, just maybe, a little bit more. Here are your hosts, Dr. Brian McCarty and Big Time Mike McGivern on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Welcome into the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. I am Mike McGivern alongside my co-host each and every week, Dr. Brian McCarty. Dr. McCarty, how are you?
I'm doing great, Michael. How are you?
I'm good. It's good to see you today.
Yeah, good to see you as well.
Man, it's been quite a week on injuries, you know?
Well, it has. Yeah, it's that time of the year again. Unfortunately, there are a lot of these things, and of course, as usual, a lot of misinformation being thrown around, which is why we're here.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I got a call from my son Matthew after the Jordy Nelson injury, and he said, hey, I heard somebody on a different station say because of the hip problem that he had, that probably caused the ACL. And he said, what do you think of that? I said, listen to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show, and I'll ask.
Well, as you well know, Michael, that's why we started the show.
Correct.
You know, it's frustrating sometimes to listen to speculation from people who really don't have any idea of how these injuries occur or what they're dealing with. And this is an excellent example of that. Having treated thousands of ACL injuries and seen, unfortunately, many of them happen live on the field, you know, this injury was a degenerative tear of the ACL. You know, he didn't have the big swelling. He didn't have the big pain. It wasn't anything he hasn't done thousands of times before that resulted in this tear. And so, you know, there are different types of tear. And in his tear, this was going to happen, guys, whether it was in practice, whether he was playing around with his kids. I mean, this was going to happen. And
that's a huge statement because a lot of people are like, well, we need to get rid of two of the preseason games because of this injury. And this could have happened getting out of his car.
Well, I don't know about getting out of the car, but it could have happened to practice very easily. I mean, that move, I'm sure he's made that move thousands of times, and it's never been an issue before. I bet you if you asked him, he didn't do anything different. I always tell the story about friends of mine who just played college basketball, were playing in medical school. They turn to the left, and down they go in a heap, and you're like, you know, and they say they didn't do anything different. The knee just gave out. And that's the kind that, remember, and I'm not saying that happens for most of these injuries because that's not true. But in this particular case, I think it is true. And that's why he didn't get the big swelling. You know, there's a large artery that penetrates the middle of the anterior cruciate ligament. And the reason anyone who's injured their ACL or seen it, usually you see a lot of swelling right after. Within an hour, there's a big swelling. That's bleeding in the knee. That's what that is. It's from tearing of that little artery that goes through. Well, you know, I guess it depends on what kind of arteries you're talking about. But you know, it swells immediately because it bleeds into the knee. He got very little of that by comparison. And that's why people were surprised. But when a guy like Dr. McKenzie has him on the sideline and he tests his knee, and he's tested thousands and thousands of knees, and he says, you know, I think his ACL's torn. You know his ACL is going to be torn.
So I get caught up in, right away I see him walking off the field, and he's not even limping. I said, no, he'll be fine.
Did you know
right away?
No, not in this case. My son actually showed me the video.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, what do you think? Because I always watch these sports with my kids, and they usually I can just diagnose the guy from whatever happened, and he's always amazed. You know, it's like a magic trick.
Sure.
How did you know that? Well, you know, there's this thing called training. And in this case, I mean, I would not have suspected that based on the way that he did it. Now, there are different angles that maybe show a little more twisting of the knee that we didn't see, okay? But in this case, it wasn't the typical thing that you see where a guy goes down in a heap, can't get up, needs help off the field. I mean, I'm sure there are hundreds of listeners out there who have had an injury to their knee that know that feeling. They know the feeling of it buckling and giving way, and then they can't get up on their own. That's the typical ACL tear feeling. And the reason for that, Mike, is because the knee actually twists out of place. The back part of the femur actually rotates off the back of the knee. That's what happens when you tear your ACL. And so that hurts. And it usually causes a lot of swelling and a lot of pain. And Jordy did not demonstrate that. Now, you know, I'm sure he's a tough guy and everything, but even he said, geez, you know, it didn't feel like that much.
What is, in your opinion, what's his next steps now? I mean, what, usually you have to wait for the swelling to go down. If there wasn't much swelling, when do you think the surgery will take place if it hasn't already?
Very soon. I mean, you know, the rules for surgery after ACL, and just so that any of you listeners out there ever in Aspen or Vail and they want to operate on your knee right away, just package up, come home, we'll take care of you. You don't typically want to operate on these immediately. And the reason for that is you want to get range of motion back in the knee. Because one of the complications that's rare these days, but was common even back when I was in my training, was stiffness after surgery. And so you have to get range of motion back to normal or close before you do surgery. So we usually recommend 2 or 3 days taking it easy, then getting on the exercise bike and getting moving. And anywhere between 1 and 2 to 3 weeks after the injury, typically we can do the surgery with no worries whatsoever.
And do you think, you know, part of his game, obviously, is he's able to run away from people.
Yes.
Will he? Do you think when he comes back a year from now, he'll still be able to do that?
I think he will. You know, the way that we reconstruct these now, you know, we talk about anatomic ACL right. reconstruction. I was talking about one of my kids who's one of my patients is a track athlete at Marquette University. And 4 months after his ACL reconstruction, I told him, well, you should start working on your burst, your speed. And he said, I just set my personal best. 4 months after his surgery.
Wow.
So it can happen for
can
sure.
Happen.
Yeah. And I think in his case, it's very likely that it will happen. He's a world-class athlete and he's got great hands, which is really what defines his game. He'll be back.
Do you know, two other guys real quick with the Packers, B.J. Raji, he was out with the bicep a year ago. He's back playing nose tackle. You're feeling he'll be okay?
I do. You know, we repair the distal biceps tendon all the time. Most people make a complete and full recovery from that. So I think he's going to be great. I read also that he took up yoga in the off season, which I think is great for his flexibility and something that most of us probably ought to be doing that we're not. But I just thought the idea of B.J. Raji doing yoga was...
Can you imagine?
It was fantastic.
I would love to see video of it.
I just think it would be so hilarious to see him... You know,
walk
like
into the class for the first time.
Twisted up in the pretzel doing some tortoise move or something.
The left tackle Bakhtiari's been out, sore knee. He made a comment, but he won't expand on it. But he said, you know, this time of year when you have little issues, you just get them taken care of. And so nobody knows. He won't answer if he had any kind of procedure.
Yeah, boy, you know, I don't like speculating about these things because,
right.
you know, but he sounds like he had a torn meniscus to me. You know, that's what it sounds like. He didn't say that. Nobody's saying that he had surgery or anything like that. And I think they might have had to say that if he did. But the way he described it, where it kind of came on slowly, it was painful, kind of swelling, keeping him out, not
right.
letting him back. And they're talking about knee soreness. It just sounds sort of suspicious for that. But, you know, hopefully that's not what it is. And he does expect to be ready for the season opener. So
which,
we'll
if he had a torn meniscus, he wouldn't be ready for the opener.
Yeah, he
right?
could be.
He could be?
Yeah, he could be.
He's tougher than I am.
Well, he doesn't have as much arthritis as you did, probably.
Probably.
I mean, you know, there are huge variables there. But we've had people back within 2 weeks after meniscus surgery. Back to playing their sport,
wow.
you know, which is on the short end. But, you know, it happens. If people come back in a week, they feel totally fine.
Hey, question for you. There was an article regarding the Wisconsin Badgers.
Yeah.
A couple guys coming back. And Hayden Beagle has been out since August 14th with a concussion. And he's starting to kind of get into no contact drills at this point. And question regarding that, August 14th, it's going to be coming up on 3 weeks by the time maybe he gets back. There are players that are out with concussions for 3 days.
Yes.
And other guys that are out for 3 weeks. And I'm wondering.
Well, this is a great question for the layperson out there who doesn't understand. Well, wasn't a concussion? Why does it take so long? You know,
correct.
When I got a concussion, my coach just said, here's your helmet, go in there and hit somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah, but things have changed. This is an excellent introduction for our guest, Dr. Aaron O'Toole, who's an expert in this area. He's a sports medicine primary care specialist, which means he does primary care medicine, but he specializes in sports injuries. He's a big component of our concussion care network that we run through the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Program. So, Dr. O'Toole, what do you think?
Morning, gents.
How do you explain
Dr.
that?
Dr. O'Toole?
So, generally speaking, you know, something like 80 to 90% of these concussive injuries will resolve in 10 days. or 2 weeks. The other 10 to 20% really kind of all bets are off. And we don't really always know exactly why that extra 10 or 20% of folks will take longer to recover. And I think a big piece of that is it's always a little hard to speculate. It's because people come with different medical histories to their injury. So either they've had concussions before, they've had bad headaches, they've got depression, anxiety, they've got neck issues, they've got other issues that may be influencing how well their brain can recover after the injury.
Question for you. He's an offensive lineman, and it's interesting for me is to see that, you know, though the collisions are obviously fierce, but they're very close together. So it's not like they're running 15 yards and then, you know, hitting somebody with the crown of their helmet. Do you see that there are positions on the football field where you see more concussions rather than a position that you don't see many?
I think generally speaking, it's the high velocity positions, you know, safeties, linebackers, running backs, and some wide receivers, depending on how they're moving across the field. The lineman issue is an interesting one because it gets a little bit to this repetitive injury issue where they're having lots and lots of injuries over time, lots of high impact, high weight stuff in the trenches that we don't really totally understand yet, frankly.
Well,
yeah, I want to touch on that as well. I mean, if you think about who they're blocking and the amount of energy that's being exerted by a 300 and some pound guy. I was just reading that, you know, BJ Raji played most of his career at 340. They say now he's super trim at 327.
Quick.
Super trim.
This is a guy who could jump over 3 feet in the air at 327 pounds.
He's a freak athlete.
Yeah, well, imagine how much force he's exerting when he comes out of his stance and hits you, and you're going to hit him. The amount of impact there is enormous. And so they may not be running really far, but, you know, imagine just jumping as hard as you can and hitting your head on the, you know, on a low ceiling.
Right.
Well,
that's kind of what it'd be.
Kind of what it can be like. And so the amount of energy can be severe. And the most important thing, and Dr. O'Toole really helps us with this a lot when we have our athletes and aren't getting better, is running through this concussion protocol and trying to make sure that by the time he comes back, he's not continuing to have headaches. And so we don't run into this permanent brain injury issue.
Right. So what it sounds like Beagle's doing right now is he's in the process of a return to play protocol. He's probably been cleared from, he's not having symptoms at baseline. He's able to do a kind of a progressively increased amount of activity. And they're going to test him every day to make sure he's not having symptoms as he gets more and more intense in practice.
Yeah. And that's, they're hoping to have him back for the opener. And like we talked about, it's not like they play, you know, Loyola Marymount or something in the opener.
No, they get to kick the tar out of Alabama.
That's right.
Those guys have – the Alabama team's got nothing.
And that's Dr. Brian McCarthy. Guys, let's get to a break. Other side of the break, we're going to continue our conversation with our special guest, Dr. Aaron O'Toole. We're going to talk a lot about strength training today, and you can get information on Dr. O'Toole if you go to mymosh.com. Some good information on him and his specialties and some of the things that he does. And certainly he medical school at Loyola University, residence school at Medical College of Wisconsin. I don't see UW anywhere on there.
No, but Medical College of Wisconsin is close enough.
Close enough. That yeah. Boy.
UW for undergrad.
Oh, you know what? I didn't see that. Oh, there it is.
Way back in the day.
There
that's
we
right.
go. Yeah, I didn't get to the undergrad.
Alabama.
I was just trying to get to the break, Dr. O'Toole, without having Dr. McCarty say anything about Badgerland. There we go. You're listening to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. That's AC/DC Thunderstruck, brought to you by our special guest, Dr. Aaron O'Toole. Go to mymosh.com for more information. Welcome back to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Dr. Brian, when we were talking about strength training and we were talking about kind of the evolution of it and how back in, you know, in the 50s, you were told not to do this.
Yeah, that's true. You know, it was thought to bind up your muscles. That's what they thought. So they thought supple muscles behaved better. So they didn't believe in it. And we were talking about how, you know, Vince Lombardi and the Packers were some of the first teams to really utilize strength training to their advantage. And that's one of the reasons they were so dominant, is that they utilized these techniques and got stronger, and they just flattened everybody they played because they were fitter and stronger. And the other teams, of course, you know, people, it's a copycat world, right? People see something that works and they think, well, you know, maybe I need a little bit of that. And,
right.
And there's a reason for that. That's how we evolve. That's how we improve. And sometimes it goes in the wrong direction. So we're going to talk about the right direction, and then we're going to talk about the wrong direction.
And, you know, there is a lot of wrong direction. There is. And absolutely. And you can pick up one magazine on strength training that says do it this way, and you can pick up another one that says the exact opposite and says do it this. There's a lot of fads, I guess, when I'm getting at, Dr. O'Toole. And let's start with kind of the basics of muscle building, if we can.
Sure. So kind of going back to high school science class, think about exercise in general as causing a little bit of strain and injury to the muscle fiber itself. When we're looking really small, the microscopic level. And every time you injure those muscles, if you have enough food for those muscles to rebuild, they rebuild themselves. And the better the food that's there, and the more training and the more resistance they are experiencing that cause the injury, the more growth that happens with those muscles. And so with time and with the appropriate training, those muscles develop, get stronger, and larger.
So you're describing the cellular unit of the muscle, right? So
right.
The sarcomeres that are there, and they break down is what you're doing when you lift weights. One of the reasons I'm not bigger, Mike, is that I have a hard time breaking down my muscle fibers. They're so powerful.
Wow.
But the way you do it is you break them down, and then they rebuild, right? And when they rebuild, the interesting thing is, right, they respond to the stress that was placed upon them, so they rebuild bigger. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. So these, and you, some of the hot words floating around in some of that literature you're talking about, Mike, is there are satellite cells that are in the muscle bundles, and they respond to the injury. They go to the injury. They help kind of bind up the injured area, and then they start dividing. And when they divide, they grow, and then they, and if you think on one small specific level, there's just one muscle bundle, but if you look on, you start to pan out and see the muscle as a bigger picture, that's happening thousands of times, and so the muscle then gets bigger as those satellite cells are helping to repair the muscle.
How, when you see somebody who is either a bodybuilder or somebody that just is bigger than the normal,
mm-hmm.
Do you know immediately if they've done that through hard work? Can you look at the guy and say, he's done it through hard work, or he's had some help?
Help as in taking something they shouldn't be taking?
Yes, correct.
It's hard to say. I mean, some of the guys that are just huge, right, the guys you see on the magazines, generally speaking, are doing things that we probably shouldn't be doing, you know, me and you.
Right.
Yeah, I'll jump in there as well, because everyone works hard. That's big. It's not like you can take a shot and you just get big. You know, that would be cool, but that's not how it works. And so that's one of the fallacies that comes in. And I heard this before we were doing the show, you know, years ago, Barry Bonds, and they'd say, well, nobody works harder in the gym than Barry Bonds, and that's why he's so big. You know, I'm thinking, well, he works so hard because he's taken all this stuff that allows him to recover. And so what Aaron's saying is that the guy, they all work hard. Your question is, can you see the difference? The
correct
answer is, yeah, you can see the difference. The guys who are really, really big, who do it naturally, don't look freakish. Mm-hmm. And they don't have that crazy, defined sort of hypertrophy of the muscle. So, yeah, you can definitely tell. And a lot of the guys who are doing it, by the way, who get really, really huge and really, really ripped, some of them don't know that they're taking the stuff. That, you know, that supplements have some of these animal hormones and things in them. Some of them do. And so they don't even know that they're doing it. They just know that it's making them stronger.
Well,
and
I think...
And to your ahead point, Mike, sorry, the effort issue, right, is there's plenty of guys that are trying to get big that don't work hard,
yeah,
and are taking the supplements and aren't big.
Right.
And they're like, why am I not getting big? Well, the idea is that the hard work has to happen for you to get to have a lot of muscle strength improvements and to just get bigger, right? But the guys that are doing stuff that they shouldn't be doing, those are, and work hard,
and
also,
we're talking
huge
about steroids, growth hormone, correct, insulin-like, right, growth factor, all these supplements, just so that people know. You know, we're not to beat around the bush. I mean, that's what we're talking about, is the guys who are obscenely huge are taking everything. I have a lot of bodybuilders in my practice. Some of them take 20 or 30 supplements a day.
Wow. Do you know, for me, When I first started really looking at this was the Tony Mandarich thing.
Yeah.
You know, he's on the cover, Sports Illustrated, and he was a monster. And people were talking, well, he didn't do that naturally. And I thought, what are they talking about? Well, and that's kind of where the door opened for that for me.
I'll tell you right now, that just very quickly. My father was an eminent physician. He looked at the cover. He looked at the guy's picture in the newspaper, and he said, he's been on steroids. He's packed full of pimples. He's losing his hair at 22 years old. He said, this guy's been on steroids.
Wow.
So just looking at him in the newspaper.
In the picture. Yeah. Hey, when you talk about supplements and creatine and things like that, mm-hmm. What do you say about the legal over the counter type things like that?
So two things, I think. One is that all the supplements in it, I think this has maybe been mentioned on one of the previous shows with the nutritionist Nicole Kernin, is that when you get stuff over the counter, it's not regulated by the FDA, so you have to be very careful about what you're putting into your body. And what you're buying. So then the second point is, you know, somebody may tell you should use this pre-workout formula or this post-workout formula. Know what you're putting in your body.
Yeah, please know what you're putting in your body, because most people don't.
And really, it could be anything. And there's actually been a study that came out a couple months ago looking at herbal supplements, and they broke them down in a lab with a chemist, and something like 50% of it was just filler, and the other 50% wasn't necessarily even what they said was in the pill. And so you just have to be very diligent about what you're putting into your body.
Yeah, the next time you want a true herbal supplement, find a pill that grows on a tree.
Right.
Okay, because that's, you know, they don't grow that way. So somebody's putting them in there. You can see where they've been produced, see what the manufacturer is. And you know, unfortunately, this is a big area of pet peeve, I think, for most of us who are physicians, and probably a lot of nutritionists, is that they don't actually tell you what's in it.
Right. There is, Terry and I work out with a guy named Rod Higgins, and it Concept 1010, now it's called Quick Fit, and he's a USANA guy. I don't know if either one of you have heard of USANA, but if you look in the book, and there's a book that doctors put out, they have taken every supplement, you know, from Nature Made to three a day to all of it, and broke them down and said, here's what's actually in them. Mm-hmm. And the reason that he got involved with this company is because when they broke it down, this was the company that had in it what they say was in it, one of two throughout the world. And so he's a big believer in this. And he borrowed the book to my wife, and Terry brought it home, and she said, look, half of the stuff that we have in our cabinet, we might as well just throw away.
Yeah.
And she was shocked by that.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting. Guys, let's get to a break. On the other side of the break, we're going to continue our conversation. Our special guest in studio for the entire hour is Dr. Aaron O'Toole. And we're talking about strength training and trying to get, you know, make sure that we get ourselves ready to play and how we can continue to play. And we're going to talk a little bit about cross-training and ways to prevent injuries on the other side of the break. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
It's empty in the valley of your heart. The sun, it rises slowly as you walk.
Letting it play a little, Brandon. Mumford & Sons, great song. The Cave, brought to you by our special guest, Dr. Aaron O'Toole. Hey, guys, we didn't finish, you know, segment one. We're going to jump into segment two, but let's talk, if we can, about why rest is so important, Dr. O'Toole. And there's a couple of things we're going to touch on before we get into the cross-training and things like that.
Sure. So rest is important because, as we kind of mentioned at the beginning, is you're breaking down the muscles with exercise and with the resistance training you're doing. And to allow all those muscles to regenerate and to regrow and to kind of re-coordinate themselves and their movements, you need to give them some time to rest. Now, that doesn't mean you lift on one day and you can't lift again till Thursday. The idea is that you just have to give specific muscle groups a period of time off. So the thought is generally about 24 hours, but you can move a little bit between that.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the strength trainers recommend doing a circuit train. When I used to do a lot of this kind of stuff, we used to do, you know, chest and back one day, then you do legs the next day, and then you do arms the next day, and then you lift every day, but you lift different groups.
Right.
And so it gives those muscles that are broken down an opportunity to recover and repair themselves, and that's how you get the build. One really interesting thing a lot of people out there should know is that probably everybody that's ever tried weight training has recognized in the first 2 or 3 weeks, you feel like Superman. Like all of a sudden you feel like you're ramping up quick and everything's feeling good. The first few weeks, what you're really doing is you're training your nerves to work better. They're recruiting the muscle fibers to fire better in the first 2 or 3 weeks. So you tend to see a fairly rapid gain and improvement of your function. And then it takes time. That's when you get into the actual muscle building part.
Right.
And so so don't be discouraged. Be encouraged. You know, you've now made your muscles work better. Your nerves are working better. They're firing better. And then it takes a little longer to get that other stuff. So just keep at it.
You know, we had talked a little bit about over-the-counter supplements. And then during the break, we talked about whey and we talked about protein and things like that. Dr. O'Toole, your thoughts on that?
So there are a lot of people are using whey protein now to supplement their workout, right? Both before and after the workout, or you know, with their meals. And I think the key is you can get that protein through your normal diet. You just have to be diligent about making sure you're getting the protein. You can be like The Rock, who pounds like 850 pounds of cod a year, and like 3 pounds of cod a day, plus 12 eggs and steak and chicken. Or you can just be like a normal person and have, you know, some chicken and some turkey and just other good proteins from your diet, rather than using the whey protein. In a reasonable amount or a moderate amount, using that as a post-workout supplement, I think, is fine, because the whey proteins on the market are pretty clean. They're easily processed by your gut and it helps with some of that recovery period.
So, you know, one of the things that we were taught in school anyway is that most Americans get more protein than they could ever use every day, which is unusual throughout most of the world,
right?
Because many people eat rice and then they supplement with beans and things. Can you get the same type of thing? Like, I'm asking this genuinely, like we were taught to drink skim milk, for example, after a workout because it's cheap. And it's lean, mm-hmm. and it's just packed with protein. Is that still a good thing to do?
I think so. I think it's kind of it's not so much of a secret anymore, but a big glass of chocolate milk or skim milk after the workout, it works really well because there's glucose or sugars in there that are easily broken down, and the protein that's in there is very easily processed. And the whey protein is essentially milk proteins, right, that they process and then ship and put into a powder form.
But Mike, when you think about the cost of a packaged good,
right,
that's sold with a big guy with big muscles on the front of it versus a container of skim milk, the cost differential is enormous. And
huge.
And truly the benefit is negligible. So keep that in mind out there, people, when you're working out, but about 20 to 30 minutes after, you want to take something if you're doing this heavier weight training, mm-hmm.
right?
We're talking about like near exhaustion training. We're not talking about sort of doing some Zumba and stuff. That's
right.
More of an aerobic and then some weight work. But if you're going to like really push your training for football, wrestling and all these kinds of things, weightlifting, mm-hmm. track, you know, you might really want to supplement with that.
Right.
Is that correct?
Absolutely. I think to your point about Americans eating lots of protein, right? The goal for having the protein supplements or eating lots of protein in your diet afterwards is only for folks that are really trying to build lots of muscle, right?
Yeah.
I mean, otherwise we don't really need all that extra calories.
We are talking to Dr. Aaron O'Toole. You can get more information on him at mymosh.com. Let's, if we can, pivot a little bit and talk about cross-training. A number of weeks ago, we had a doctor in that said, look, I never, very rarely do I see a patient who gets injured, who is a true is training true cross, you know, cross training style, and I'm wondering the big deal as far as cross training and why that you don't see many injuries from that. And we had talked about it when Dr. McCarty said, look, one day you do legs, next day you do arms, but in true cross training fashion, that's really kind of the best way to do this, correct?
Right. I think to your point about the injuries, and you guys probably mentioned on the show previously, is that a lot of injuries happen because of overuse, right? Aside from the traumatic injuries that happen that we see all the time and we go ooh and ah about.
Right.
But the typical injury is just an overuse injury. And so that happens when people are hyper-focused on one joint or one muscle group. And so cross training allows you to kind of manipulate a much larger swath of your muscles on your body, and with a large focus really on the core muscles, you know, your center, which helps you in lots of different ways in terms of endurance, in terms of balance, that also helps with injury prevention.
Yeah, very much so. We harp on this all the time, but you know, these NCAA studies that show the people with best core strength had the far fewest injuries and far fewest are far best performance. So mm-hmm. in both areas. So true cross training though, Mike, just to be clear, is switching up. The weight training I just described about circling from different muscle groups,
right,
isn't cross training.
Correct.
Cross training really is, you know, you maybe do some jogging one day, you do an elliptical one day, you do some swimming, you do some biking, and you mix it up all the time. And, you know, you hear it on TV, these people selling these things about muscle confusion and all that, you know, which is really just cross training. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really what it is. And it's, you know, sometimes that helps.
You know, Dr. O'Toole, what I think one of the best, and I learned this from this show, one of the best ways to prevent injury is to do cross training.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such an effective tool that people, I don't know if people understand that.
Yeah, so aside from, again, avoiding that overuse of a single joint or single muscle group, if you think about what Dr. McCarty was just saying about the nerve training that you get when you are exercising, we're looking at knees in particular, or hips, and folks that have those types of injuries have them when usually their gait is kind of out of hitch. And you can help avoid a lot of kind of the abnormalities in your gait, in your balance, when you're doing some of this cross-training stuff and working on the core again. And working on all these different types of muscle groups and different exercises kind of helps everybody, all the muscles kind of fire better together.
There's one other reason that this is very helpful: prevention of boredom. So, no, I'm sort of joking, but not really. People tend to exercise longer if they have a plan. And if they have a plan that involves doing different things, they tend to get less bored. And so they keep exercising. So they continue to maintain their fitness longer. So it's actually a very important thing. If you're out there and you're thinking about getting into exercise, or you're already doing it, make sure you have a plan. That's the most important thing you can have.
You know, literally since one of the first meetings, Dr. O'Toole, that Dr. McCarty and I have, that we had, this is over a year ago, he talked about have a plan, because I told him where I'm trying to get to and where I mm-hmm. was. And he said, look, if you want to continue, make sure you have a plan. And I kind of thought, and then he explained why. And he's right. I mean, the plan really keeps you focused, and it kind of keeps you, you know, accountable to that plan.
And I'll tell you something, you know, you, Mike, and Rami Makhlouf are two great examples of people who are taking the bull by the horns and doing it, you know, working a plan. I mean, Rami's lost, I don't know how much weight.
A lot of weight, you bet.
He's gotten super fit. And I talked to him the other day. He told me he's as fit as he's ever been in his whole life. And this guy, I mean, he really is living the thing. He lost, I don't know, 150 pounds or something. And he is just so happy with himself. I met a kid the other day in my office, high school kid, trim as can be, looks super fit. He lost 150 pounds. I didn't even know it.
Wow.
And that's just hope for people out there. If you get a good plan and you stay diligent and patient, you can get there too.
Well, look, I've still got a long way to go, but I lost 85 or 90 pounds. And Dr. O'Toole, I had my physical 3 weeks ago, mm-hmm. and blood pressure was 110 over 68. And 3 years ago, they were going to put me on high blood pressure medication. And he said, look, you're going on. And when you go on, it's going to be hard to get off, or you figure out a way to take care of this. And my wife was in the meeting when she said, look, here's what your blood pressure is. And she said, look, if you don't think everything that you're doing and we're trying to accomplish isn't working, 3 years later, you're exactly where you need to be. So there's no doubt. Guys, let's get to a break. Other side of the break, we're going to continue our conversation with our special guest, Dr. Aaron O'Toole. We're talking strength training, number of other things. One thing I want to touch on next segment, if we can, is this low-impact exercise. And I think it's something that we've been doing now, and I want to talk to you a little bit about it and the benefits of that. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Temple of the Dog, Hunger Strike, again brought to you by Dr. Aaron O'Toole. I've never heard them, but thank you.
Eddie Vedder.
Oh, that, okay.
Chris Cornell.
That I know.
Hunger Strike is a very effective form of protest. Ask Mahatma Gandhi.
Yeah, there you go. Welcome back to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. I'm Mike McGivern alongside my co-host, Dr. Brian McCarty. In studio guest, Dr. Aaron O'Toole. Guys, last segment, let's start, and we've been talking about, you know, strength training and kind of the state of the art and how it should be done and some of the things that shouldn't be done. Let's talk about high-level athletes and kind of the direction that they go, Dr. O'Toole.
Sure. So what I'm recommending to the guys that I'm seeing, the high school or college guys that are really trying to work on their craft and get things moving quickly and improving, is some of this high-intensity interval training. This gets into the cross-training stuff we were talking about last segment, and it really, in short periods of time, you're really trying to go to exhaustion from both a cardiovascular standpoint and from kind of a core muscle group standpoint. And what that does is it has a little bit of that muscle confusion we were talking about. It builds endurance, builds strength, and also has some of that cardiovascular benefit that we were talking about as well.
And just to be clear, the muscle confusion, the muscles aren't really confused. But
right.
What it means is that they're mixing up the exercises. So it's not the conventional. You know, we were talking about Robin Yount lifting.
Correct.
In baseball, he was the first one to lift on days of games, and it was like taboo before that. He was using Nautilus machines, which were really in vogue back in those days, the early 80s, and they really customized like individual muscle groups. And what's really come in now is this idea that you want to train lots of different muscle groups in lots of different ways. So when you see these videos of J.J. Watt doing these crazy things,
right.
I mean, that's what they're doing. They're mixing up the workouts, and it's really an effective way to do it.
If you look at these really high-end folks like Olympic sprinters, right, or the NFL guys, they're not doing just sled drills, or they're not just sprinting. They're doing all this other stuff because, you know, the elbow bone's connected to the shoulder bone, right? All these muscles kind of work in tandem, and the more you train all the other muscles, the better they perform together.
So when you're at the WAC at 3:30 in the morning on the elliptical and you're turning the channel on the TV, there's all these infomercials mm-hmm. about, you know, do this for, you know, this amount of time every day, or do that for, you know, these high intensity type things that you can buy. Mm-hmm. What's your feeling on those?
So anecdotally for myself,
yes.
I've used them and they've worked really well. But I think an important piece here is to know your own body and know what you're ready for. Again, coming up with a plan and knowing that if you've got a bad knee, a bad shoulder, or a bad back by history, those types of exercises may not be the best option for you.
Do you know, if I can, a lot of people in my age group decide, okay, I need to get after this thing. And they go so hard early mm-hmm. and they get hurt and mm-hmm. they say, I can't do this. This isn't right. This isn't yeah. for me. And then they go the other way. And to get fit and don't get hurt, I think is just a really, really important part of this.
Absolutely.
My mantra.
It is.
It's my mantra, because the thing is, we don't want you to get hurt, but nobody would go out and just kill it right away in a professional sport. You wouldn't go to the first, you know, weight training thing and try to lift your max. I mean, you know, you have a plan. So we keep preaching this, but it's really important. And the older patients who want to get fit should think about that. Don't burn it all out with your enthusiasm in the first day. And a lot of these programs, people are afraid to modify them. Don't be afraid to do that. If something hurts, just change the way you're doing it.
So, and that's another good point. It's a lot of these kind of package programs that you can get. You can do the really high intensity stuff, but usually now they're coming out with modifiers, right? So you can do something that's similar types of exercise.
Right.
You can watch them do it, but it's not quite as intense.
Hey, do you know the first time, again, this is 3 years ago, the first time that I went in and I worked with Karina, who was my trainer at that point, I did 5 minutes on the elliptical and 10 wall pushups.
That's pretty good, Mike.
That was it. And I thought,
yeah, but look at where you've come. I mean, well, seriously,
correct.
Right?
The body's incredible. I wanted to get you, to pick your brain real quick. This low impact, mm-hmm. yeah. There is, again, I talked about it earlier in the show, but it was Concept 1010, and now it's called Quick Fit. Same guy, Rod Higgins, but it is 10 seconds down, 10 seconds up. Really slow, low impact, where you barely sweat. But it's a really, it's a killer, man.
Yeah, it's a great way to get your muscles going.
Yep. You tear those muscles down like we talked about at the beginning. And
right.
Let them build it back up.
No doubt. Guys, thank you.
Hey, we could talk to Aaron forever, couldn't we?
We could. We
yeah,
could.
I think we will.
We'll kick out Randy Miller from the Milwaukee Area Home Improvement Show and just keep talking about this
stuff.
We
don't need to do that, but we'll have Aaron back soon.
No doubt. Dr. O'Toole, it's good to see you again.
Good to see you guys, too. Thanks
for
having
me. Go to mymosh.com and get any information that you need on Dr. Brian McCarty, Dr. Aaron O'Toole, the whole team from Mosh. They're great people. Guys, again, thank you very much. We'll see you next week, Dr. McCarty.
I sure will. Excellent. Looking forward to it. Have a good weekend, everyone.
This is Ben.
Stay fit.
Stay fit. But you know what, Stay fit. Don't get hurt. This has been the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.